Matthew chapter 26, begin reading in verse 36. Then cometh Jesus with them unto a place called Gethsemane, and saith unto the disciples, Sit ye here while I go and pray yonder. And he took with him Peter and the two sons of Zebedee, and began to be sorrowful and very heavy. Then saith he unto them, My soul is exceeding sorrowful, even unto death. Tarry ye here and watch with me. The implication is watch and pray. And he went a little further and fell on his face and prayed, saying, O my Father, if it be possible, let this cup pass from me. Nevertheless, not as I will, but as thou wilt. And he cometh unto the disciples and findeth them asleep, and saith unto Peter, What, could you not watch with me 1 hour? Watch and pray that ye enter not into temptation. The spirit indeed is willing, but the flesh is weak. And he went again the second time and prayed, saying, O my Father, this cup may not pass away from me, except I drink it, thy will be done. And he came and found them asleep again, for their eyes were heavy. And he left them and went away again and prayed the third time, saying, The same words. Then cometh he to the disciples and saith unto them, Sleep on now and take your rest. For behold, the hour is come that the Son of Man is betrayed into the hands of sinners. Arise, let us be going. Behold, he is at hand that doth betray me. We're looking this morning at the Garden of Gethsemane. There's a lot in these verses I won't mention. I want to center my thoughts on one thing in verse 38. He says, My soul is exceeding sorrowful, even unto death. My soul is exceeding sorrowful, even unto death. I am amazed at those words. We're not talking about Peter or the disciples. We're not talking about somebody down the street. We're not talking about a man or a woman. We're not talking about a young child, but we're talking about God. We're talking about God in flesh. And he said, I am sorrowful even unto death. He literally said, I am at the point of death because of the sorrow. Isaiah 53 verse 3 says, He is despised and rejected of men. A man of sorrows and acquainted with grief. He's acquainted with grief. It means he knows grief well. You would think when God came to earth, nothing but good would happen. You would think he ordained it, he instituted, he planned it, he initiated, he did it. It looked as though, it seems to me, as though he would make sure that everything happened just right and he'd have no problems whatsoever. But the opposite is true. We're looking next week to Easter, the day that he arose. But before he arose, he had to suffer. Before he had the victory, he had to, what would seem to us, be defeated. He wasn't, of course. He was a man of sorrows. He was acquainted with grief. That means he knew what it was to grieve. Some used to teach that God was not heard or not touched or not grieved. And the reason they said that is because God does not change. And they say, a God who can be touched or grieved changes. But that's not biblical. But the Bible does say that he is touched by us, and he is grieved. Can you imagine a God who is grieved? He said, I am exceeding sorrowful. Isaiah said he knows well, he's well acquainted with this thing of grief. Why in the world would God be grieved? Why in the world was Jesus grieved as he prayed in the Garden of Gethsemane? I want to say first, he knew about grief because of the denial of his creation. I mean, after all, he made it all. He made everything. He spoke it into existence, including man. And he comes to this earth, he comes as a man, And those chosen people, the nation of Israel, they reject him. They turn away from him. They'll have nothing to do with him. The Bible says he came unto his own, and his own received him not. All the way back to Abraham, God had chosen the nation of Israel, not because they were special, not because they were better than the rest, not because they were bigger than the rest. He chose them because he wanted to. His desire was to work through Israel, to spread the truth throughout the world. Israel wants to be the light of the world, but Israel failed. And that's revealed especially when their Messiah came to this earth. When Jesus came, when the God of Israel came in flesh, they said, "We don't believe in him. We'll have nothing to do with him." No wonder he was grieved. Israel, so many times in the Old Testament, turned their back on him, forsook God, turned away from God. God did only good to them, took care of them so many times, provided so many times when they didn't deserve it, and yet they forsook him. They turned away from him. Now he sends his son to them. He sends his own son, and they say, "I don't believe in him. He is of the devil." No wonder God was grieved. He's grieved because of the denial of his creation. Israel rejected him. The entire world, for the most part, has rejected him. Most people don't believe, by the way. Very few, relatively speaking, believe on the Lord. It says this in John 12:37, "But though he had done many miracles before them, yet they believed not on him." Hey, they saw the miracles. They heard his words. They saw him do, listen, what only God could do, and they still said, "I don't believe in him. I don't want anything to do with him." He was grieved because of the denial of his creation. All that he had made and all that he had done was turning their backs on him. Hey, even his own family rejected him. His own brothers in the flesh did not believe in him until after the resurrection. He lived his life with a family, with brothers and sisters who did not believe. "You claim to be the Messiah. We know you. You're our brother." And I'm telling you, it grieved God. He's not some robot. He's not some machine. He is a being who feels hurt, who is grieved, who knows what it is to sorrow, who knows what it is to have a broken heart. And he is grieved because of the denial of his creation. He's grieved because of the devotion of his children. Hey, look and see what we're finding here in these verses. All he asked them to do was watch and pray. I mean, listen, he knows he's about to go to the cross. He knows what's ahead. And if you will, humanly speaking, if there's ever a time when he needs someone to pray for him, it is now. He, humanly speaking, is sorrowful. He is at the point of death. He is so grieved. He is so broken, humanly speaking, that he sweats blood. He needs somebody who says they care to be there and pray for him. But he goes and finds them asleep. His children are not devoted. His own people. Hey, I'm talking about believers now. You'd expect the world to turn their back on him. You'd expect the world to say no to God. You'd expect them to go on and live as they please. You'd expect the world to not be moved by anything Jesus says. But here's his own people. Here's his own children. And he's grieved by what they're doing. They call him Lord, but they don't make him Lord. They say he's the Lord of their lives, but they don't prove it by how they live. Their doubt grieves him. Remember how they doubted so many times? How many times throughout the 3.5 years that they walked with the Lord, they were shown to be fearful and afraid. And he said so many times, why is it that you doubt? Why are you afraid? Do you not know I'm with you? I'm telling you, for somebody who says, I know the Lord, to doubt is not only wrong, it grieves him. It hurts him because we're saying, I can't trust you. I can't trust you. I can't depend on you. But I want to tell you, it grieves him when his children don't trust him. He talks about so many times they doubted, not just Thomas, but all the disciples, after he died, wondered and doubted and ran away and hid. They all fled. That hurt him. They couldn't get along. I'm talking about it grieves him. And how his children treat him. Remember, they were arguing about who was the greatest. Can you imagine that? I mean, they are nothing but mortal men. They have failed the Lord and made a mess out of their lives. The Lord has come and saved them. They're still nothing. They're still flesh. They still blunder. They still say things that are wrong and do things that are wrong. And instead of being so thankful that they crawl on their knees around him, they're wondering who's the greatest. Who's going to be the greatest in the kingdom of heaven? That grieved him. That touched him. That burdened him. Their disobedience hurt him. He had said to them, tarry and hear and pray. And he goes and finds them asleep. I'm trying to say this morning that what the world does hurts God. And what his children does hurts him. What we do does matter. What we say does matter. But it's not just wrong. And it doesn't just make him angry. But it hurts him. It'll do us well to realize, to think, I'm not just breaking his commandments. I'm not just breaking a rule. But I'm hurting him. I'm hurting him. He grieves. It says he was a man of sorrows and acquainted with grief. He said, my soul is exceeding sorrowful, even unto death. He knows what it is to hurt. You ever been hurt by somebody you love? Somebody ever done something that hurts you? Hey, if you don't care about them, it'll hurt. But not so much. But if it's somebody you love, somebody you care about and they do you wrong, it hurts because, not just because they did you wrong, but because you care about them. And what they did showed they don't really love you so much. They don't love you as much as they pretend to be. And that's exactly how it is with the Lord. What we do with him and for him, oh, it hurts him so many times. He is grieved because of the denial of his creation. He created everything and everybody. And most turned against him. Most said no. But he's grieved because of the devotion of his children or lack thereof. But he's also grieved because of the difficulty of his circumstances. Man, you think you have it rough. You think there's times where you just barely make it by. I do not understand. I cannot comprehend. But there are some people who literally say that Jesus and the disciples were rich when he walked this earth. I do not know what Bible they're reading, but it ain't the Bible. Jesus said, I don't even have a place to live. He says, the foxes have holes and the birds have nests, but the Son of Man have not where to lay his head. He knew what it was to go through difficult times. I'm talking about he grieved. He suffered as he walked this earth. When it was cold, he was cold. When it was hot, he was hot. He went nights without rest. He stayed up all night long praying many times. He knew what it was to live in a world that not only hated him, but a world that attacked his flesh just like it does yours. He knew what it was to be weary. He knew what it was to grow tired. He knew what it was to have hunger and thirst. He knew what it was to be weary and have no bed to lay down in. I don't know if you ever experienced that. It's not a good experience. I'm talking about he is well acquainted with grief. He knew and knows what sorrow is. While he walked this earth, he faced difficulties that we never even imagined. He endured the difficult times. He endured destitute times when he didn't have anything. He endured dangerous times when they attacked him and tried to kill him. All he did was good. All he did all his life was good, but people hated him anyway. There were times they tried to stone him. Matthew 12:14, it says the Pharisees went out and held a council against him, how they might destroy him. John 5:18 says, therefore the Jews sought the more to kill him. John 8:55 says, and they took up stones to cast at him. But Jesus hid himself and went out of the temple, going through the midst of them, and so passed by. John 10:31 says, then the Jews took up stones again to stone him. I want to ask you, where did the anger come from? Why would men despise him so much? All he did was good. All he did was reach out. All he did was try and help. And yet people hated him and despised him and abused him, and it hasn't changed a bit. The same thing's true today. But I want to say this morning, not only is he grieved because of the denial of his creation, the devotion of his children, the difficulty of his circumstances, but he's grieved because of the death of the cross. The death of his cross. And that's really the point of my message. What could have happened? What in the world is going on to where God in flesh, omnipotent, all-powerful, the very God who spoke the universe into existence in flesh, what in the world could happen to where he would say truthfully, my soul is exceeding sorrowful, even unto death? He says, literally, I am about to die. What grief, what horror. What was about to happen? I'll tell you, the cross. The cross. He was about to face my punishment. He was about to die my death. He was about to pay your payment. And it not only was troubling, it not only was something he didn't look forward to, he said, it's grieving me. His death involved suffering. Isaiah 53:5 talks about him being wounded for our transgressions. He was bruised for our iniquities. The word bruise is not like we think about, get a little bruise on the surface. Bruise literally means to mangle. It means to beat to such a point, just like the Bible teaches, that you could not even tell he was a man. Those who knew him best, had they not known it was him, had they looked at him, they would not have been able to discern who he was. He was beaten that much. He was mangled that much. The flesh was ripped. The flesh was torn. The crowns of thorns had done their job, and the whip had done its job, and the cat of nine tails had done its job. He suffered. But that's not what grieved him. I don't believe that's what he dreaded. He dreaded it. Anybody would. He knew the suffering. He had a body that not only was like ours, it can feel. His body, if you will, was as perfect as you could be. He felt so intently and so intensely and so perfectly. His feelings were more intense than ours, humanly speaking, physically. But the suffering of the cross, the death, was not what he dreaded. His death did involve suffering, but his death also involved sin. I believe that's what he dreaded. He was not trying to escape here, by the way. He was not saying, Father, if we can figure out some other way, let's do it quick. Oh, no, it had been planned before the foundation of the world. He's facing the sin of the world. Isaiah, again, 53 verse 5 says he was wounded for our transgressions. He was bruised for our iniquities. Isaiah 53 verse 6 says, all we like sheep have gone astray. We have turned everyone to his own way, and the Lord hath laid on him the iniquity of us all. 1 Peter 2:24, whom his own self bare our sins on his own body on the tree. I want to tell you something. I believe the physical pain as bad as it was. We cannot imagine how bad it was. But the physical and affliction and the physical pain and the physical suffering he was about to endure was nothing to him compared to the fact that when he hung on the cross, all of our sin was placed on him. He became as guilty. He became as guilty. Our sin was placed on him. The darling, perfect, holy, without flaw, sinless Son of God. God, really God. God, actually God. All the sin of the world was placed on him. 2 Corinthians 5:21, he hath made him to be sin for us who knew no sin. That just means he didn't sin while he's in this world. He never knew sin. He was perfectly, absolutely holy God. Untouched by any kind of sin or disobedience. But when he hung on the cross, he was hanging there for us. He was hanging there as us. It's like all the sin of every drunk who's ever lived. Every drunk in the gutter. Every drunk that leaves their family to starve to go and get another drink. Every Wall Street lawyer that's got his mason jar full of liquor underneath his desk. Every drunk who's ever lived. It's like every prostitute that's ever lived. All the ungodliness that is involved with that action. Everyone that's ever lived. Every drug addict that's ever crawled into a corner and put the needle in again. All the sin of every person who's ever lived. Every child molester who has done those unbelievable things to little children. Every murderer who has taken people and killed them and laughed as they did it. Go on, list another one. Every sin that's ever been committed by every person who's ever lived. That's what he took on him. That's what he bore. No wonder he was grieved. No wonder he was sorrowful. No wonder the Bible says he knew grief well. He was well acquainted with grief. And even that's not all. When he hung on the cross, the Father had to judge him as the worst sinner who ever lived. Hey, add all your sin together. Every time we ever did anything wrong before we got saved and since we've been saved. Every one of them, add that plus the billions upon billions upon billions of people who ever lived. And every bit of that was on him. And God judged him as though he was guilty. What he suffered. Can't even contemplate that. Can't even take that into my mind. But I know this, it grieved him and it grieved the Father. And Jesus said as he hung on the cross, my God, only time he ever called him God. All the other times he said, my Father or our Father. But when he hung on the cross, he was no longer hanging there as the Son. He was hanging there as Rick. He was hanging there as Danny. He was hanging there as Susie. He was hanging there as Bill. He was hanging there as you. And as bad as the pain was, the grief of that burden was worse. And he said, my God, why hast thou forsaken me? And God the Father not only had to judge the Son, but he could not look upon that sin. And for a matter of at least 3 hours, perhaps more, the Father forsook the Son for the first time ever, and it never happened again. The Trinity was divided. No wonder he was grieved. But he says to us this morning, I did that for you. I did it for you. I believe this, if I had been the only one, he'd have done it for me. If you'd been the only one, he'd have done it for you. You know what that means, don't you? It means he loves you. I don't know where you're at this morning. I don't know your spiritual condition, but I know this. If you're lost, he did that for you. He died for your sin. He died in your place. He endured what I've talked about and so much more for you because he loves you. He does not want you to go to hell. But if you don't accept what he did and accept him as Lord and Savior, that's where you'll go. Boy, I hope you're listening this morning. I hope you realize how serious this is. Do not neglect. Now, boy, I'll tell you what. If you had any idea how much struggle that I've had this morning with this message, it'd have been easy to just quit. But I believe there's somebody here who needs this. I believe there's somebody here, probably more than one, that's heading to hell right now. And you don't have to. Jesus died for you and paid your debt. And he said, if you'll come to me, if you believe you're a sinner, realize that you're a sinner like everybody else, and you believe I died for you, paid for your debt, and then I rose again, if you'll come to me, just pray. Call on me. If you'll come to me and give your life to me and ask me to forgive you, he said, I'll do it. I don't want to be mean, but anybody that turns that down is not very wise. And the devil will do all he can to keep you from getting saved this morning. I promise you, already you've thought about 1,000 different things. What will my friends think? I'll have to give up so much. The devil's a liar. You don't have to give up a thing. Boy, when I got saved, when the Lord started dealing with me, the devil kept saying, well, what about all this fun you're having? Boy, I got saved and I realized I hadn't had any fun. You want to enjoy life, you get saved. You know what enjoyment is. But I believe the Lord's saying to some of us that are saved, we grieve him every day by our attitude, by our actions, by what we say, by not obeying him, by not telling others. I'm talking about he's not a robot. He's literally grieved. It breaks his heart. I want to say to those that are lost this morning, I'm begging you, the Lord's speaking to your heart at all, please, you listen. And if you hear him, if he's speaking to you, I'll tell you what he's going to say. He's going to say, you need to be saved, you need to be forgiven, and I'll do it. If he's speaking to you, that's what he's saying, if you're lost, I promise you. And he does not want you to put it off. Next week may be too late, tomorrow may be late, this afternoon may be too late. You may leave this world before tonight comes. I want to say to us that are saved, what we do and what we say and what we think does matter. He loves us so much that when we do things we shouldn't, it hurts him. It hurts him. You ever been hurt by somebody? Boy, he loves us so much that it hurts him when we don't walk with him. Let's stand together. If the Lord spoke in your heart this morning at all, for whatever reason, please come to this altar.